As you said, Leo, you're going to have Sammy Kamkar on, which I think will be great. He is a real character, and I mean, and a class act hacker. I have a video. He's produced a video of what he has done recently that was up there as one of the top two stories of this past week, just in terms of our listeners making sure I knew about it. He's created something he calls Poison Tap, and it's exploiting locked computers over USB, and he went public with this last Wednesday. Now, if you ask yourself, why does that sound familiar? It's because this is a weaponized extension of the exploit we discussed in early September. A different hacker named Rob Fuller. And we gave it full coverage in the beginning of September. He created a posting snagging creds from locked machines. And at the time, he was using a much more expensive, I think it was $155 computer-based USB dongle. And the idea is, and we discussed it then, that when you stick a USB into a machine that is on, even if it's locked, if the lid's closed, if it's, you know, if it's like inaccessible, if that USB device claims through the USB enumeration to be a network adapter, unfortunately, it instantly gets all kinds of unquestioned privilege. And so Rob showed us early in September how he was able to take a USB Ethernet device and exploit some features of DHCP, the Dynamic Host Configuration Protocol, with some another person's responder software in order to essentially get the password hashes from the system and then perform an offline brute force attack in order to crack the passwords. And this is a problem that Windows has had for a long time. Their earlier password hashing was not very good. You know, the old Landman, we were talking about that a lot a decade ago. So that was then. Now Sammy came along and said, "Ooh, that's interesting." And he rolled up his sleeves and just went to town. So this thing, he calls it applied hacking, is sort of his banner. So Poison Tap siphons cookies, exposes the internal router, and installs web backdoors on locked computers. It produces a cascading effect by exploiting the existing trust, as he describes it, in various mechanisms of a machine and network, including USB or Thunderbolt, DHCP, DNS, and HTTP, to produce a snowball effect of information exfiltration, network access, and installation of semi-permanent backdoors using a $5 weaponized Raspberry Pi Zero. So essentially, the problem is when a network interface spontaneously appears, the operating system enumerates it, says, "Oh, you know, the user must want to get on that network." And so the first thing that happens is it receives a DHCP query. Well, DHCP is very powerful, and we've talked about it extensively in the past. The minimum thing that it does is give you an IP address. It can also give you DNS, and it can also declare various routing parameters. That is, DHCP is way more than just IP and DNS. There's an extensive vocabulary of what it's able to offer. So by leveraging the fact that an innocent computer made the mistake of querying a very powerful malicious DHCP server, which nothing prevents, essentially. It's able, he's able to roll that into sort of incrementally by gaining a foothold, doing something, then pushing it further, and then substantiating that position, basically just walk into your computer and take it over. Ending up, for example, rerouting all of the traffic that the machine is sending on a valid interface through it. So it's able to, if you're not using HTTPS, to strip headers, to prevent security provisions that are by default available in HTTPS, because of course the tunnel is unencrypted. So by intercepting the traffic, he's able to, basically this is a full exploit by somebody who knows what he's doing, very creative, to completely compromise the browser aspect of web surfing on that machine, even to the point of leaving some stuff behind, which continues to have an effect. So it's a breathtaking compromise, all based on this idea that a USB device, which should not be trusted, might be a network. And the fact that our systems at the moment, they don't pop up a dialogue. They don't make you click OK to confirm that you want to enumerate this newly appeared network device. They just do it across the board. So, I mean, it's so he says for features, emulates an Ethernet device over USB, hijacks all Internet traffic from the machine, despite being a low priority unknown network interface. Siphons and stores HTTP cookies and sessions from the web browser for the Alexa top 1 million websites. Now, he does that because, remember, anytime your browser responds to a request from one of those sites, it will send whatever cookies it has. So Sammy injects a million tiny hidden iframes into the page. Each of those makes a query to one of a million websites, and that query will contain all the cookies they have. He intercepts that and grabs them, so he has all the cookies that your browser has for Alexa's top 1 million sites. And if any of your sessions are statically logged on, you know, like the, you know, you have clicked the box, you know, remember me, so you don't have to re-authenticate every time. Well, that means that cookie represents you for your logged on session. And if that's then exfiltrated, which his technology also does, a remote hacker could then immediately jump on authenticating as you on that site, just like you opened, you know, just like you went to the site fresh and it remembered that you had been logged on before and you said, don't ask me anymore. He's able to expose the internal router, that is your internal router that you're connecting to the internet by, to an external attacker, making it accessible remotely via an outbound WebSocket and DNS spoofing. He can install a persistent web-based backdoor for HTTP cached objects for hundreds of thousands of domains. He even poisons JavaScript libraries being sent by major content delivery networks. Does not require the machine to be unlocked, and these backdoors and remote access persist even after the device is removed and the attacker, as he puts it, sashays away. So it's a great video. I'm delighted that he's going to be on KnowHow, because I'm sure I would give our listeners a pointer to that, Leo, because they will get a kick out of
I'm not sure what week, but yeah, it'll be fun. Yeah. And then we will, the following, as soon as they tape that, we'll put a bit of it into new screensavers. But, I mean, it's one of those things where I think we want to spend some significant time with him demonstrating
the whole
thing.
And for securing against it, notice that everything I was talking about does require, that is in terms of traffic capture, since he isn't and probably can't mess with cookies, mess with certificates, there's no way for him, and he says that all of this is HTTP. So for servers to secure against this, the only thing servers can do is use HTTPS exclusively, use HSTS, the strict transport security, to always be to allow browsers, because when users don't put HTTPS into the browser, they typically just www. And we've talked about how unfortunate it is that browsers still try HTTP as the default protocol. It'll be interesting to see when that changes. I wouldn't be surprised if that's something that we see Google lead with Chrome, when they have, when their tests have demonstrated that it won't break too many things. Because it would sure be nice if at some point browsers, instead of defaulting to HTTP, first tried HTTPS, or maybe tried them both at once and used the more secure, the HTTPS, if it also succeeds, when they haven't been told one way or the other. And then finally, remember that cookies, when cookies are set, they can have a secure flag set, which prohibits the browser from sending them with its queries over a non-HTTPS connection. So if all the cookies, like session cookies, for example, which are sensitive, if those had the secure flag set, then they would not be exposed in an HTTP attack. And on the desktop side, he said, you know, that's fine for the servers. On the desktop side, Sammy suggests, as he put it, adding cement to your USB and Thunderbolt ports can be effective.
Not on my new MacBook. No way.
No. And he says, closing your browser, that is shutting the browser down, closing your browser every time you walk away from your machine can work, but, he says, is practically impractical. Disabling USB or Thunderbolt ports is also effective, though also impractical. And he says, locking your computer has no effect, as the network and USB stacks operate while the machine is locked.
That's interesting.
However, yeah, it is. However, going into an encrypted sleep mode, meaning, you know, where where it writes the RAM out and encrypts it.
Hibernation,
right. He calls it encrypted sleep, where a key is required to decrypt the memory. And he says, for example, File Vault 2 and Deep Sleep solves most of the issues, as your browser will no longer make requests even if woken up. And for all this, the source code is on GitHub. So, and this is not, I mean, this is not, there's no one to disclose this to responsibly. This we knew about in early September. He's just taken it to its logical extent. That is, oh, wow, you mean I can get the machine is going to make a DHCP query of my own little custom DHCP server when I plug it into USB? Oh, I know what I can do with that. And so here's another instance, as we often said, that attacks never get worse. They only get better. Yeah. And so this is 3 months worth of evolution of a problem. And again, this isn't exploiting any vulnerability. There's nothing to fix anywhere except, you know, maybe if a machine is locked and closed, you might wonder why the OS would default to enumerating and bringing that port online. So, and maybe even the default option should be, you know, always prompt before recognizing a new network connection to this machine. Because as we're seeing, network connections are dangerous. They just get up to too much mischief.